Catholic Radio Indy now presents Faith in Action, a program that looks at how everyday people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Our program is underwritten in part by Franciscan St. Francis Health, providing faith-based integrated health care, a recipient of HealthGrade's 2015 America's 100 Best Hospitals Award, and by Marian University, a great Catholic university dedicated to providing students with excellence in teaching and learning in the Franciscan and liberal arts tradition, preparing transformative leaders for service to the world. And now, here's today's edition of Faith in Action.
Welcome once again to Faith in Action. I'm Kent Blanford. In studio with me, the familiar voice of MJ Crowder.
Kent Blanford.
Yep, me again.
I want to thank all of our listeners and volunteers because it took so many people to pull off such a successful radiothon just a couple weeks ago. And we had a winner. Did we ever announce the winner on air? We had a Cardinal Ritter and Cathedral High School. One came Wednesday afternoon and one came Thursday afternoon. It was to see who could raise the most money in a three-hour period, the afternoon segments. Cardinal Ritter High School won! Yay!
My Raiders pulled it off again.
Yeah, you did. They were so much fun. They were delightful, delightful. Kent, anything else we have to say before we jump right in?
Nope. We've got an important subject to cover today.
We do.
So let's get right to it.
Our guests on Faith in Action today, Drs. Michael and Lisa Patchner. Michael, of course, is the dean of the IU School of Social Work and also the founding member of the Catholic Social, National Catholic Social Workers Association. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Well, thank you for having us.
God bless you both. God bless you both. Tell us, before we get started, a little bit about you. So how long you've been married, what side of town you live on, what parish you belong to, kids, grandkids. Tell us.
Well, Lisa and I have been married for 39 years.
Oh, God bless you.
In May, we'll be celebrating our 40th wedding anniversary.
Oh, my.
Yep. And time went by very fast.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes.
It does.
It's hard to believe. And we're members of St. Simon's Parish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we live in the Geist area. Mm-hmm. And we adopted two children. We were not able to have children. And our oldest child, Christopher, went to be with the Lord about 3.5 years ago.
3.5 years ago. And okay, do you have grandchildren?
We have one grandson, okay. And his name is Braden, and he's the son of our daughter, Maria.
Oh, God bless you. Grandchildren are wonderful. They are wonderful. We're expecting number three in March. We have a 5-year-old, an almost 2-year-old, and then our daughter is expecting. So, yeah.
That's wonderful.
Oh, it's lovely.
As the saying goes, if we'd known being a grandparent was so good, we would have done it first.
Yes, we would have.
We talked to Ray Guarendi. He was the speaker for the dinner, the Catholic Radio dinner. And I asked him this burning question that I think other grandparents have too. Is it wrong to spoil your grandchildren? Because isn't that our job? I mean, I should actually have no guilt at all because it's not my job to feed them the broccoli and the fish, right? Or the chicken is not my job. I mean, and he said if the parents are doing a good job, then spoil away. So when he came and stayed with us a couple weeks ago, he had an ice cream sandwich for breakfast. And you know, it was,
that's okay, Grandma.
Because it was at Mimi's house.
Exactly.
Anyway, so Kent, you're probably not there yet. You don't have grandkids yet.
Oh,
No. Well, just think about it. You can spoil away, I'm just saying.
Eventually
spoil
Trust
away.
Me.
Okay, so actually, we're going to talk about Christopher. This show is really all about Christopher and the love that you have for Christopher that really morphed into something significant for all of us. So tell us about Christopher. Tell us all about him. How did it start? How did you first find out about him?
Well, Lisa and I weren't able to have children. And so we were living in Illinois at the time, and we work with Catholic Social Services out of Peoria, and we put our name in for adoption, and that's not an easy process. I mean, You know, they fingerprint you, they interview you, you have to go to classes, they come and inspect your home, you have to take psychological tests to make sure. So, but anyway, we went through with that whole process and we adopted Christopher. We got him when he was 9 days old.
Yeah, he was a beautiful little baby boy with button brown eyes. And he was supposed to be a normal, healthy newborn, and that's what we thought at the time we adopted
him. That's what the information you had was that he was a bouncing, healthy baby boy.
Yes.
That was your information.
Absolutely.
Right. And his was he a local adoption from inside the United States?
Yes.
From the Peoria Diocese, and we lived in Champaign, Urbana at the time.
And your first, this was your first child?
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
At about 4 months of age, I said to Michael and the pediatrician, I think we've got something wrong. And the pediatrician at that time said, oh, you're just very nervous, newly adopted couple, and you're just making worries that shouldn't be.
Yeah, he actually scolded us, saying that we were being nervous new parents, and we needed just to not be so uptight and kind of relax. Yes.
Oh, my. Okay.
And so at about 15 months of age, he still was not developing as well. And we did neurological testing, and I can still remember the doctor saying to me, he looked down at the floor, this neurologist, and he said, there are problems. He's developmentally disabled. And I said, does that mean cognitive impairment? And the guy looked at the floor and said, yes.
And this that's was the how same he, guy
no,
who said,
that
oh,
was a
okay.
specialist.
Right.
And then it began in earnest, therapies, speech, OT, PT. And I can remember one Valentine's Day when Christopher was 22 months old. Michael can pick it up from here because he used to work with Christopher. Every time he came home from work, he would work with Christopher on his motor skills. And something really cute happened on Valentine's Day when he was 22 months.
Well, they didn't know that he'd ever walk. And so we thought he'd be wheelchair bound. But we kept working with him. Lisa was taking him to therapies and everything. And I'd come home from work. I was working at the University of Illinois then. And I'd come home from work and try to give her a break. And so I would work with him, and I'd get him ready for bed every night. And I'd always stand him in the corner. And he was able to stand up, but, you know, he balanced himself against the walls and, you know, rest on the walls. And on Valentine's Day, when he was 22 months old, he took 3 steps.
Oh, dear.
And, you know, I just started getting all choked up, and I said, Christopher, you got to show Mommy what you just did. And so I called Lisa. I said, Lisa, you have to come here. And so she came to the bathroom, and I said, show Mommy what you can do. And he took 3 more steps.
Oh, my.
And we, the two of us, just cried and cried. It was the happiest Valentine's present we could have ever had.
Ever. Oh, my goodness.
He continued to learn to walk at that point and eventually ran.
Oh, really?
But there were many things he couldn't do throughout his life. He remained in diapers his entire life. He could not speak much. He would say a few words, but he understood a lot of what you said. And we were at a very good church in Pennsylvania at the time, and they did religious ed with him and said, he can receive First Communion. Let's work with him. He received First Communion, and Michael would walk him up every Sunday we could get him to Mass at. And he would receive First Communion, take the host, and he would appreciate it so very, very much. And he really was an example to many people in every parish we had belonged to. Then confirmation came along, and we were living out here. And at that time, we were at Holy Spirit at Geist. And they also encouraged us to allow him to go through the confirmation. And I still remember that Bishop Higgy at the time knelt next to Christopher's wheelchair for a picture. He knelt down next to Christopher.
Well, he recognized, I mean, obviously, that this was a saint right here. I mean, truly, right?
Well, after confirmation, we noticed a very unusual affinity that Christopher had for the Mass. And this is a child with a 40 IQ. That's what we were told. And he would put his hands together in a prayer-like way, and then he would put his hands up toward the altar and look up at the altar during the consecration of the Eucharist. He also would sometimes weep during the great Amen. We could not explain it. Other people saw it. But he wanted to go to Mass, and he loved the Eucharist. And so I would encourage other parents out there, if you have a child with a disability, get them as far along as you can in the sacraments, because when they get confirmation, they get it.
Sure.
They get it.
How beautiful is that? If you're just now tuning in, listeners, our guests today, Dr. Michael and Lisa Patchner. Michael is the dean of the IU School of Social Work. He's also the founding member of the Catholic Social Workers National Association for Social Workers. We need to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. Our guests today, Drs. Michael and Lisa Patchner. We're talking about their son, Christopher, who led a wonderful life. He really did. He was obviously a gift from God.
Yes, he was.
And it was his life and your love for him that prompted you to do something, I think, quite courageous when he died 3 years ago. So let me ask you, Christopher did have difficulties during his life, cognitive. He was impaired.
Yes.
He lived away from home for a period of time.
He did. But I want to say that when we adopted him, he was 9 days old, and he was part of our family, and we couldn't have loved him any more than we did. I mean, the love was just there. And when we found out that he was disabled, we had friends who said, why don't you just take him back?
Give him back. Sure.
And we were just shocked, like he was a broken piece of furniture that you would send
disposable
back to the store.
Sure.
And there was no way in the world. And we knew that he was a gift from God, and it was our privilege to be able to raise him, and we feel that way till now.
Today. Did you ever find out what the underlying root cause was? Was it, I hesitate to even ask this, but did they know when you adopted him?
You know, they didn't, but there were some red flags, which we did not know fully. About 6 months after he passed, they had done some genetic testing at his bedside. We knew it was a significant metabolic disorder, but we didn't know how it was caused. And our geneticist at the time said, I think I know. And oh, our hearts were just broken when we found out.
This was after he had died, though, right?
Right.
Yeah, well, they did the testing when he was terminally ill in the hospital.
Okay. And then we found out that he got a double whammy of a very rare metabolic neurological problem, because both of his parents were first cousins, and we never knew.
Oh, dear.
So he should have expired as an infant or
sure,
a young child.
Sure.
And they cannot understand why he lived to 30. They do not know why. He should have died much earlier. There were only 50 known cases in the whole world of what he had, and he had a double match because both of his parents were related. And there was one case in the literature that described what Christopher had, and the child died at 4 months of age.
Oh, my.
So he was a miracle, and he's a pro-life miracle.
Sure, of course. You know, as you talk, Dr. Patchner, I'm thinking that that when you found out very young that he had, that he was impaired, that he had cognitive disabilities and he might not walk, and other people suggested, well, just take him back, just give him back. And the look on your face was, you know, your eyes opened, you know, and he was your son. He was already your son, of course. And probably the moment you brought him home, the desire that you had been building for a time. And by the time you saw him, of course, he was your son. So, but that kind of thinking is common, is a common thread throughout our culture and society. I mean, we live in a throwaway society.
Yes.
We do.
And
we
it's
do.
Not perfect. We throw it away.
Yeah, exactly. You know, which makes this story even more compelling and interesting. Because fast forward to 3 years ago, or you can take it even a little bit before. So he had progressed to the point that he was institutionalized at the end. He was in a hospital facility at the end of his life.
At 21 years of age, we moved him to a group home, and he was able to be with us on weekends and with the group home during the week, and he made friends for the first time, which was wonderful for him. And he learned some self-help skills. That was good for him, and he liked it there. We had some difficulties, but we won't get into that at this this talk. But his condition continued to deteriorate. Because of his metabolic condition, he aged very rapidly. We began to see that. And he developed seizures that were intractable. He had trouble digesting food. So ultimately, he got a VNS system implanted, where there are electrodes that stimulate the brain so you don't get seizures as frequently. It's very commonly used today. And he had a tube feeding so that we could supplement what he ate with tube feedings. But he continued to deteriorate. And at one point, they allowed him to have they didn't give him the correct medicine at the group home, and he had a 20-minute grand mal seizure.
Oh, my goodness.
With significant brain damage. And at that point, when he was hospitalized, we knew we had to place him in a nursing home. And he was in a geriatric facility for a while. And then he went, we had to place him in a specialized facility for adults and young children with developmental disabilities.
So at what point did you realize that, let's go before three years ago, so was it at 4 years before he died, did you realize that he was not going to live much past his 30th birthday?
We kind of knew that it was going to be limited time. We knew in our hearts. Nobody would say that, right, Michael?
Right.
Nobody
would
say that, but...
Right. Okay, so you knew that the end was in sight. You knew that he was not going to live.
Well, we saw him slowly deteriorating. And, I mean, he had so many seizures at times. And I remember on Father's Day, we were getting ready to go to Mass one time. And he just had this seizure in the bathroom. And I caught him, and I got him to bed. And that was a 20-minute grand mal seizure, and I didn't know that he was going to be ever coming out of that. And I remember just praying to God and praising God and thanking God that we had the privilege of having him that long. And I prayed and asked for more time, and we got more time.
Oh, God bless you. You know, listeners, if you're just now tuning in, we're chatting with Drs. Michael and Lisa Patchner about their son, Christopher, who died about 3 years ago. And the interesting thing is that once he died, you were not privy to his... You were guardians of Christopher, of course.
Yes.
But once he died, you were not privy to any of his records. It was an immediate line in the sand that had been drawn. And because of that, you went on to not only protest this and argue with this, but took it to a bill to the state senate and got a bill passed, which is Senate Bill 516, the guardian power to request health records. Okay, so that's the end of the story. But I want to fast forward to a little bit about what happened immediately following his death, and maybe a week or so before, shortly before, that prompted this action. you of course you knew that he was dying soon, or dying, he was in frail health. And I read in some of this material, the literature, which is public information now, which is public record,
right,
that you had spoken to a health care provider or someone in the who was caring for him and asking questions about his health, about his care, and you were told, go be with him, I imagine because they thought he's got limited time and you should be with him in the limited time he has left. So, and they said, and we will talk with you after he's passed. So, calmly, with that information and that assurance, you went to be with Christopher, and then he died, sadly died. Okay, so take it from there. So then he's died, and?
Well, there were a lot of issues prior to his death. He was
in
a
care. You mean care questions of issues?
Yeah. He was in a, and I won't mention the nursing home publicly, but there was a specialized nursing home that cared for him, and we had two very significant medication problems that caused him quite a bit of distress prior to his death, and a group that advocates for those with disabilities that's federally funded and here in Indiana, and I can't mention them because that's part of the public record, Indiana Protection and Advocacy was involved, because it wasn't just Christopher, it was many of the individuals with disabilities at this facility. They were having to really monitor this facility because of a variety of care problems. They had been gathering information and advocating for all of the residents, and Christopher died of sepsis and pneumonia following some of these medication issues. And they told me they wanted to talk to me after he had expired, that you be with your son. And when I called them afterwards so that Michael and I could sit down with them, we wanted closure.
Sure, sure.
And we wanted to see that what had happened to Christopher didn't happen to others.
Sure, yes.
That was our intent.
Right.
They said, well, according to the guardianship law in the state of Indiana, you no longer have rights to any of his information, and we cannot speak with you.
Now, this was someone who you were, who had been talking to all along beforehand.
Right.
Yes.
But it was like, so once he's died, the everything was dammed up, if you will, and there was no more information available to you, and yet you were his legal guardian.
And
right?
His parents.
And
yes.
His parents. And okay, so not only were you not made aware of that before he died,
right,
but you were led to believe that you could have more conversations by this person. I mean, you
right.
led to
yes.
believe that this was, that take care of him now and we'll talk later.
Right, yes. And this particular person felt terrible about it, but she was told by her executive director, according to Indiana law, you cannot speak with them anymore.
Okay, so that's across the state. That's the law.
Yes. So
they were following the law.
Right.
Okay, so you felt completely stymied. What do you do then? I mean, you were basically shut down. So what prompted you to, I mean, you're in the middle of your grieving process, for pity's sake. So you have to not only go through the funeral, but the aftermath. What prompts you to approach someone to change this? What prompted you to do that?
Well, we didn't want to see any other parents or people who had loved ones expire and be in the same position. I mean, it was almost like a double hit. You lose your son, and then you lose all your rights as parents and guardians. And we didn't want to see this happen. It just wasn't right.
Now, how long after this happened, how long after Christopher's death, did you start the process to, let's make this right?
Pretty quickly. We met with different groups of individuals that we thought would be in support of a change in the law, like ARC of Indiana, Association for Retarded Citizens in Indiana. We spoke with Indiana Protection and Advocacy and said to them, we are going to see this changed because we do want to talk about our son's situation with you. And there was an Indiana Guardianship Task Force that we met with. And then some legislators that we knew that had worked with Michael on previous legislation.
So you basically took a bull by the horns.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
Decided it was, we. You, believe it or not, we have less than 2 minutes left. Huh. We have, I know it's about a minute and a half left. And I would kind of like to button this up, but I'm going to cede the last 2 minutes to you to tell as Paul Hyrie would say, the rest of the story.
Yes.
So we met with different individuals, Senator Gene Brough, who had worked with Michael on previous legislation, agreed to investigate it further. And she's the one that spearheaded it through the legislature and got bipartisan support. That's the key here.
Huge.
From both the Republicans and the Democrats.
Huge.
To tweak this law. We also got support from the Bar Association, who usually takes ownership over regulations at the state level, but in this case realized there may be a problem, because this wasn't just guardians appointed for those with mental incompetence who were younger, but also guardians of elderly people. All of us who have to take guardianship over loved ones could be affected by the existing law.
There were some unintended consequences of the guardianship as it existed. In our process, we learned that there were even bodies in the morgues that languished there because nobody had the legal right to make decisions.
You could go to court and pay money to get that, but you're talking about money that many families do not have.
Oh, my goodness.
We could have done that, but what about all the families that
now, once Senate Bill 516 was passed then, could you go back and get the information, or was it from this day forward?
You know
so
what?
Did it help you?
We got enough from other providers that we didn't feel it necessary to get it for that particular provider. But everybody knows now, as of July 1 of this year,
hip, hip, hooray. Senate Bill 516, guardian power to request health records. You know, they ought to call it Christopher's bill instead of Senate Bill 516. Christopher. Well, as far as we're concerned, it's Christopher's bill.
It is.
God bless you, Drs. Michael and Lisa Patchner, for being our guest on Faith in Action.
Oh,
God bless you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Faith in Action, underwritten in part by Marian University and by Franciscan St. Francis Health. If you'd like to suggest a guest or a topic for a future program, call us at 317-870-8400 or email mj@catholicradioindy.org. And remember, you can hear or download this program or any Faith in Action program 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org. Just click on the Programming tab and select Podcasts.